Welcome, everybody. Thanks for attending. This is going to be the second session that we have a part of this tech ed that's focused around the Link development platform. So our first session yesterday was really focused on an overview of the different development options that you have with Link, both server-side and client-side APIs, and we went through a series of demos to showcase some of those key scenarios that you can actually light up using the Link development platform. Just so I'm aware, how many were actually able to attend that session yesterday? Okay, quite a few. I'll be giving a 5-minute overview again of the platform story, just for those who weren't able to attend yesterday. But if you're interested, definitely check out the recording of the session. The code is DevB302. So my name is David Newman. I work on the Link engineering team for the platform development. I actually got my start at Microsoft doing some custom development using the Link platform. So when I first started, my first project was actually doing custom development for a healthcare type scenario using the Link APIs. So this particular project that I was working on was a showcase application that actually combined using the Link development platform and Link APIs together with the Xbox Kinect APIs. So the scenario was that I was actually trying to use Kinect in a patient bed monitoring scenario and then use Link as the UC communications backbone to actually connect those patients with a nurse who's monitoring at a nursing station. So using the Kinect, I would actually measure the patient's bed state, and using some of the custom presence capabilities through the Link platform that I showcased yesterday, I'd actually send that information to a nurse's panel where they'd be able to see a list of all of their patients and also what bed state that patient was in. So if the patient was sitting up, if they were lying down, if the patient was out of bed, the nurse would be able to see that through the custom presence. I also added in capabilities where the patient, if there was emergency in front of the Kinect sensor, could actually start waving their hand. And if they waved their hand for about 5 seconds, I'd place an automatic video call to the nurse's station so the nurse would be able to see video feed of that patient who is in aid. So the reason I bring up this project is not because I wanted to tell you guys about how silly I looked actually testing this app in my office. So if you've ever done any Kinect development before, you know the testing's kind of fun. I basically was on the floor in my office pretending I was that patient in various bed states and seeing that the presence would update in Link. I really bring this up because that was truly the moment that I actually discovered the true power of Link as a development platform and Link extensibility. So Link really sets itself apart from other unified communication solutions that are out there on the market by providing this platform to developers where you can actually extend Link out of the box with all the various modalities in your own line of business applications. So our vision overall with the platform is to enable every single application to be a Microsoft unified communications endpoint. So Link as a team, we've made the commitment that we want to provide our developers the best possible experience to extend Link out of the box. We understand there's communication scenarios as a part of your line of business applications that you want to leverage, and we want to enable you to do that and use Link as that unified communications backbone. So you'll know some examples that are out there already of some. We've been working right from the very beginning, not only in our first-party applications, which include Outlook integration, for example, embedding presence within Outlook and jumping out into calls directly from that application, but also third-party developer apps such as Contact Center or embedding presence and click-to-call inside of your application flow. So my team in particular, we're focused around our developer programs for third-party developers. So in a nutshell, our mission is actually to provide you with the best possible APIs that we can provide for both server-side and client-side applications that actually will work across all different devices, operating systems, and platforms. So that's actually a key point about this presentation, is that today we're going to be focused on one API that's a part of our platform set, and that's the Unified Communications Web API. And the reason we're going to focus on that is because this is our latest generation API that actually allows you to create applications that run across different platforms. You're not limited only to desktop. You can actually develop your apps across various platforms, whether that's a web-based platform or whether that's a mobile platform or some platform where actually even Link Today is not supported. We'll go into much more detail about that. Another thing I want to highlight, so Link out of the box has a great set of collaboration features, communications features, a full set of modalities. I'm not really going to be talking today about Link out of the box. I'm going to be focused around how you as a developer can extend Link into your own applications. But one thing I want to call out here before we get started there is that this range of first-party products that we provide from Link, three of these platforms, the mobile phone, the tablet, and the browser, are actually powered using the Unified Communications Web API. So the same API that we give you access to as developers, we use for our own first-party products. So that's a key point there to understand, is that we develop this for ourselves, but we also expose that to you as a developer. All right. So first, I want to start off with a very high-level introduction. What is the Unified Communications Web API? The first clarification I want to make is that the web API is not only for web applications. Some people get confused by the name and think that that means that I'm just creating a web app. But really, it's called this name because at its core, it's web requests that are going over the wire. You're communicating back with Link server over HTTP, whether that is from your browser web page application or that's from your native mobile app. So we'll see some examples of some native apps today. But any communications platform that supports, or any programming language that supports HTTP, is supported by this web API. So traditionally, in the past, we'd offer a great set of APIs, and I went over some of them yesterday, that are used for building enterprise applications, both server and client side, and extending the client. The world actually changed quite a number of years ago, where it was not always about a desktop application running on a PC. Now today, and particularly in the communications area, it's very important that people are coming in on different types of endpoints and wanting to communicate and use their applications from both web pages as well as on their mobile devices. So our team, internally, we came up with a plan where, how can we provide these type of mobile applications and web applications where traditionally we had used SIP to create those desktop applications. We needed to come up with another way to actually provide those capabilities across mobile and web. And that's communication now would be done over HTTP. So in a nutshell, the web API itself is a REST-like API. So we'll talk a little bit about what REST means, but essentially that's how the web works today. HTTP requests, it's a standard architecture that's used across the web today, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But the web API itself is a abstraction layer on top of our Link server that you can actually use to access Link server capabilities from your own applications. It's one contract layer so that you can access that from whether you have an iOS application or you have an Android application or you're coming from a web page. Those same requests that are going over the wire will communicate with Link server, that layer that we provide on top. Oh, and one thing I didn't mention is here, we are exposing these capabilities that include things like embedding presence inside of your application, grabbing contacts, scheduling conferences, setting up conferences, or doing instant messaging. And a little bit what I'll share later in the presentation is our next step is also exposing media capabilities through this web API. So I kind of mentioned this already, but the key thing to remember is that is because this is just HTTP that's happening over the wire, you can create applications using this API that run both on the desktop, mobile devices, tablets. If you're looking to create, say, for example, a Link Windows 8 modern universal app, you would go to this web API. That's your development option for actually embedding capabilities using Link. When we set about to design the API, we were really focused around modern web design principles. So browsers are fairly ubiquitous across most devices today. So we wanted to create an API that was easily consumed by a language like JavaScript or easily consumed within your web applications. So we focused around that, and it should be key that today we're going to be going through some of the JavaScript helper libraries that we provide to you as samples. But it should be noted that you don't have to use JavaScript. The reason we provide those libraries is because JavaScript can run across multiple different devices. But you can actually use those HTTP requests and send it from any language. And we'll talk about that on the next slide also. But I talked a little bit about this REST architecture that makes up the web. So in a nutshell, what REST means is that you're requesting data from a URL, and you're receiving a response back from the server. So standard web principles, but all that engagement is now happening over HTTP with the Link server. So you probably, if you've done any web development before, are familiar with other REST APIs that are out there. For example, if you're doing some Office 365 development, they offer REST APIs. If you're doing development using Facebook, they also offer, you know, similar REST APIs. So like I mentioned, at its core, it's all about those HTTP requests that are going over the wire. We provide you today with some JavaScript helper libraries that are essentially taking care of that boilerplate code that handle and parse those HTTP requests. We'll be going through those samples, and it really makes it easy to get started with a web app in under 5 minutes. Now, the key here, though, is that you also can use any other programming language that supports an HTTP stack. So whether it's a .NET language, whether it's using PHP, Ruby, Python, I see there's a question. We'll take the questions at the end. You can use any language that supports an HTTP stack and communicates across the wire that way. So that's a key value add. I'm going to be showing a couple demos here later of some various different platforms, a Linux platform, Android platform, Windows Phone 8.1, universal app that's running using this API. So has anybody used the Link web app before? A couple people? Yep. So the Link web app is actually a web client version of Link. So if you are trying to communicate with somebody outside of your organization who actually does not have Link installed on their computer, they can actually go and use this Link web app, which allows them to open a browser page and essentially have the Link communication capabilities directly from within their browser. Now, key point here is that this is actually powered by this UC Web API. So your users of this API or of an application that you build using this API, they actually aren't required to have the Link client installed on their computer. Because this is all happening over HTTP, the server is giving those capabilities, they don't need the Link client. So it could be on any platform, even if Link client is not supported. So before we get deeper into the nuts and bolts, I want to show a quick sample application that my team actually created. I'm just going to load this up here. And we'll switch over. Whoops, wrong screen. There we go. Perfect. So let me load up this app here. So this is a Windows Phone 8.1 universal app that my team actually created. And the scenario behind this app is that We saw a need from Microsoft Travel within our own organization. The need was that, particularly in a large organization, often there are Microsoft travelers who are traveling to a certain area and don't realize that there's actually other employees who are on travel in the same area. So we wanted to create an application that could leverage that knowledge and leverage the location of those employees to actually connect employees who are traveling with other employees. So you can imagine the scenario, your company has maybe many people traveling to a conference, for example, and you want to communicate with those other people who are traveling the same place. Maybe you want to share a taxi. Maybe you want to, instead of grabbing room service, you want to go out for dinner together. Maybe you want to network with others that you probably didn't know before, but they're traveling in that same area. So travel is a great time to connect and use communications. So in this app, we created basically a Windows Phone 8.1 app. So I'm going to log in here as a test user. And we're actually deploying this shortly internally for all of our employees to download. Let's make sure, hopefully I got that password right. Awesome. So we got a user agreement. So the first option here as a part of this app is check in your location as an employee. So that we had various options here. You could select your travel records. If you had one, we pull those from another database into the app. There's also the option just use your current GPS location. So I'm just going to grab my location again here. We're doing some big Bing Maps API integration. So here we are. I can move this around if I want some privacy and type in an address if I like. Then I have an option here to enter some ways that I'd like to connect with others. So I'll just select all of them. I can enter some details about how I'd like to connect. And then I can choose whether I want to be anonymous until somebody contacts me and I agree that they can see my contact information, or I can just share my contact. And that's, again, the link contact details that we're sharing. So I'll do the check-in. And now we can see that what the app is doing is actually looking for others who have, we built the logic behind this, who have checked into to that same area within that similar period of time. So I can see there's a few people in here. Let's see who's in here. So I've got one person who's anonymous, and then I've got a couple users here who are offline, and I'm actually logged in as the wrong other test user. So I'm going to log in here as Heidi. Let's log in. Oops, let's get that. Okay. So now, once I log in, we'll see that the presence in the application is actually going to update to show that Heidi's online. So you can see, there you go, the presence. I have a presence subscription completely set up using the web API. That request came in, and then you can see we updated the presence in that application. So the idea is that directly from the app, we don't want to launch out to the full link client. We want to have that communications experience directly from within this app. So you can see ID's online. I'll start a chat with this user. Sure. Here comes the toast message that's coming in on the link client. Now, key to this scenario is also that we want to, I can see I've got a message here. Respond if you wish. Say hi. And there, now the message is coming through. I could go into the app and say, hey, do you want to grab dinner? Whoops. I guess I clicked off. Oh, here we go. So then the messages are coming through. But the key here is that most Microsoft employees, and if you deployed Link 2013, your users are already using the Link mobile app. So this user who could either be on her desktop on Link or could be on the Link mobile app will actually get that Link message coming through directly from the app. So what we have here is a USEWA application that's now talking to a user who is on Link. And you can see I kind of customized the branding towards my own application and embedded that right in the app without doing the launch out. So I'm going to jump back now to the presentation. So now let's get a little bit into the nuts and bolts. That was kind of an example scenario demo. But really, I want you to just understand the key concepts of the API before we do any more demos as a part of this. So the API itself is actually made up of two key parts. So one is what we call the command channel or the synchronous channel. So that is actually used for making requests to the server and receiving responses back. So you might be grabbing a contact information. You might be doing a get against presence. You might be scheduling a meeting with the server, and then you receive a response back from the server. Now, the other portion that's happening over the wire is that event channel. So you can imagine this is particularly important for real-time communications. We want that event channel to enable scenarios like instant messaging. You can't be doing any polling back towards the server at all times to see if there's an instant message coming through. Through this channel, you could also set up a presence subscription. When the presence changes, you want to actually be able to just get that response from the server without having to do a poll back. So you saw that the presence updated in my app. There wasn't a request that I need to make to keep checking that. It's an asynchronous event channel. Those two things that are happening over wire, that's actually what the API is. So at its core, it's HTTP CRUD requests, if you're familiar with those over the web, create, read, update, delete. And HTTP, it's the same concept. You do get requests. You're doing post requests against the server. You're doing delete requests. And what are you actually making those requests against? So we'll talk a little bit more in depth in this also, but the concept is that you have a resource or essentially an object that lives on the server that you're making one of those requests against. And we'll go into detail of that. Now, these helper libraries that I'm talking about are the JavaScript libraries that we actually provide to you that deal with some of that boilerplate, handling and parsing those requests that are coming in. We provide you those today in JavaScript. We'll shortly be providing actually some open source projects that are the same type of libraries but for iOS and for Android. But today there's nothing stopping you from making those requests yourself from those different platforms. So I talked a little bit before about REST and that's how the web works today, but the key concept here is that you have a collection of resources, and we view our API the same. You have a collection of resources on the server that can be accessed by unique links or unique locations. So your resources, I like to think of them as nouns or different things, and then you're actually making those HTTP requests against those resources. So for example, a simple example is making a GET request against a presence resource. Now, another key underlying concept to understand about the way that this web API is designed and the way that you consume this API is the concept of hypermedia. So hypermedia, essentially, at its core, all it means is that you have a set of links. So when you make a request to a server, you're not just getting back data. You're actually getting back links to other resources. And this is actually a key, very key underlying concept, because when you are actually querying against those, when you're querying against those resources, for example, for the me resource, you're going to be returned a set of links that actually will point you to other resources that are related to that particular resource or object. Now, why is this key? And it's key because you're letting the server actually define what those capabilities are. If we make, and we're doing rapid development against this API, if we make an update, for example, and we add another capability or something changes in there, you never want to hard code those things into your application. You want to actually let the server define what those resources are and where those resources are located. your Link server topology might have different administrative settings. You may expose different types of capabilities to your app. So the key is to actually let the server define those links and use those links to make those subsequent HTTP requests. And those links can include both resources as well as different capabilities. So in this list here, you can see there's a capability to start messaging or start phone audio. big slide of text. I don't want to go through all this. I'm just bringing it up in case you want to read more about our design process that we went through with GCWeb. But there's a couple key points here that I want to call out when we went about designing this API. So the first, obviously, that I already talked about is the concept of hypermedia. So that actually leads pretty much directly into the backward and forward compatibility that we have by using that concept of hypermedia. If we are making changes or some of those capabilities aren't exposed, you're never actually hard coding those into your client-side application. You're querying to the server is returning that set of capabilities, and you're parsing those responses to figure out what those capabilities actually are. And another thing I want to call out here that's key design about this API is we designed around mobile first. So if you are actually familiar with SIP, so SIP communication protocol, you'll know that to do certain tasks, SIP is actually very noisy. So there's a lot of requests that are happening. So you could never actually use SIP for creating a client application that's going over the web or creating a mobile application because there's so many requests happening over back and forth that's just going to eat up your battery life right away. So what we do is we extract those details into a REST interface so that you're actually just sending very few requests and receiving responses from the server. We also add in some different capabilities to actually help with mobile. For example, you can do batch requests to the server. So instead of sending a bunch of different requests, you can send those requests all at once and receive a set of responses. And then I think I covered most of the other is that we were focused on, we wanted something that's multi-language. So not just focused on desktop apps that could run with any modern language that supports HTTP, which is most modern languages. And so this is my quick example. So going from SIP to HTTP, so in SIP, if you wanted to actually, let's say, escalate a peer-to-peer call to a conference, it's going to take 9 requests back and forth to actually make that happen. With the web API, we abstract those details away so that it comes down to 2 HTTP requests. So I talked about the concept of resources and that the server is returning resources. What actually do those resources actually look like? What are you getting returned? And how do you have to actually be set up, and we provide libraries to parse these different responses that are coming back from the server. But the key is that those responses are always coming back in a standard way. So a resource is made up of 3 primary parts that we've highlighted here. So the first is actually this web link connection, collection. It's a set of standard links, and there's always a self link included that points back to that resource that you've basically gotten back from the server. So this will include a set of links that you can actually then now make subsequent requests to the server. The embedded resource is essentially those are links also, but what we've done is we've provided you with a set of links that are actually related to that resource already. So for example, the me resource, when you get that returned, often you're actually going to be then, once you've gotten me, a standard use for an app is to actually then get the presence. So we've gone ahead and actually, instead of you making another request to get that, we've actually included that link right here as a part of this resource. So different resources will have different included embedded resources. And then the resource itself could have a set of key value pairs and properties that will essentially define that resource itself. So I want to spend a couple quick minutes going through what's actually happening when you're first starting out with your web API application. So on the right here, you actually have your own custom web or mobile application. Usually that'll consist of your app layer. And in this case, if you're using those helper libraries, then you would use that as to basically deal with some of that boilerplate code for handling those requests that are coming in. So on the left, we have our link server. And you can see there are various parts that we're going to query using the HTTP that's going over the wire. But the first step that's actually going to happen is we're going to hit this auto discovery service. Let me actually see if I can grab the pointer here. So we can see here, let me get this here. Laser pointer, perfect. So the first step is that we're going to actually hit this auto discover link that's on auto discover service that's on the link server. So what we're doing there is it's always a standard link for your particular domain and your particular server. So we're going to hit that first outright from the JavaScript libraries. What we're going to get returned is what we call this cross-domain frame. And now this is particularly only for web applications. Now the reason we need that is because over HTTP, if you are querying from a different domain back to the server, that application actually does not, it will reject those requests that are coming from that location. So the best way to think about it is if you think about having two browser tabs open in your browser. One browser tab, you have your banking website. Another browser tab, there's a forum. You're in a forum. Somebody in their signature has written some code that tries to make a post request to a post request that basically could make a post request to your banking website in a different tab. The modern browsers will actually block that from happening for security reasons. So in order to create the trust towards your link server itself, we use this concept of a cross-domain frame. So we'll actually get that return, and then once you hit the auto discovery service, you're going to actually be redirected then to this web ticket service that's over here. So you'll use this ticket service to actually then provide the credentials, and there's a couple different auth options we'll go through, but provide the credentials or the auth option to basically authenticate against the link server. Now, once you've done that authentication, you're actually going to receive back an OAuth token. So now, that token will actually be used in all subsequent requests because it shows that you're actually authorized against the link server and can make those requests. Because you're going to be doing post requests against presence, you're going to be sending messages, you have to have that authentication token or you're going to get a 401 unauthorized, essentially. Once you're authenticated and you have that token, now you can actually either use that synchronous channel, for example, to grab a user's display picture or start a chat, start phone audio. Or you can actually use that real-time event channel where you can actually do conversations and start real-time conversations, set up subscriptions where the server will communicate back. Now, what's happening on the server is that your requests that are coming in and your communication capabilities, those are then going back through link server, and they can go out to users who are either they themselves on another web application, another UCO application, or any client endpoint, like the link desktop client. So you're now creating conversations from your app back into link. So one key thing before we start into the, hey, how do I really, really get started on development within 5 minutes is a debugging tool that you'll likely want to use. So if you've ever used debugging tools within the browser, if you press F12, you see the requests that are going over the wire. Fiddler is a similar type third-party tool. It essentially lets you see what's going over the wire, same as the debugging tool in a browser, But here you can actually dive deeper. So this tool is actually much easier to actually inspect those responses, and you can even modify those for your own testing purposes. So I would suggest if you're really getting started with web development, consider downloading a tool similar to Fiddler so that you can actually debug your applications. So I want to, instead of, it's a little difficult to see code as we're going over the wire, so instead of that, I want to really walk through what those requests are happening, and one particular flow that I want to look at is the sign-in flow. This is something that's always going to be needed for your app when you're first getting started. So your first step is always, like I mentioned, to hit that Discover service that's on your domain. So here I just have the example linkdiscover.microsoft.com. This would be linkdiscover.yourdomain.com. Once you hit that service using a GET request, you're actually going to get back a 200 OK, and that's going to include this user token here. So once you get this user token back with this link that's included, and you'll see that this resource that's returned back is in a standard form like we talked about before. There's key value pairs that are easy to parse. In particular, this is in JSON. It's easy to parse in JavaScript. And you can see that they're included kind of in a standard format. So once I get that link back, what I want to do with that is actually then make a GET request against that Discover service. So once I make that GET request, what's going to happen is that I'm actually going to get a 401 and get a challenge back because I'm not an authorized user. So it's going to send me back this information. And here's the step where I now need to take this WW Authenticate header, and I actually need to use that link to perform my authentication against it. And you can see the concept here of now, I'm not hard coding anything here. I'm always getting it back from the server and then taking that and leveraging it. I'm going to make a post request here using the grant type. So I mentioned there's a couple different ways that you can do auth. User and password is one way to do that. Passive authentication using ADFS, or actually doing an anonymous user, an anonymous meeting join. We'll talk about that one in a second. So here we go. So I sent my username and password. I'm getting a 200 OK back. And what now I'm given this token that I talked about. You can see this access token here. This token is what I'm going to use in all subsequent requests that I'm sending to the server. So I'm now authenticated using this token. This token will have an expiry. You can always renew that token if you reach that expiry. I think the default is 8 hours. But you're going to now use this to make your subsequent requests. So here we go. I'm sending a GET back to that original link that I was actually got the 401 from. Now I'm going to hit that again, but I've got my bearer token now. And you can see now what I'm going to get back is now this applications resource. So now I didn't get that 401 back. I've been authenticated. I'm getting that X frame that I talked about, that applications resource. Now I post against that, and this information is actually about the client that I'm actually coming from. So you can actually see that I'm coming from the browser here, and there's other values that I'm sending. But now once I'm sent there, you can see now I'm already returned back the concept of a USEWA application. And within that, it contains key capabilities. So the ones I've highlighted here are the me resource, which in Link you understand what it's everything that's about yourself. So it could be your note, it could be your own presence, it could be your own contact lists. People would have your contacts, you can do online meetings, you can start communications, and those resources have now been returned, and you're going to be sending now subsequent requests to those resources. Now, I went through all this, but one thing I want to point out is it's very important to understand what's happening over the wire, but through those libraries that we provide, we have actually take care of a lot of these details for you. And I think now is actually a good time where we can actually jump right in and I can show you those libraries and actually what they look like. So if there's one thing that you take away from this presentation and you remember when you leave, if you're starting web development using Link and you want to use this API on any cross-platform application, your starting place is usewa.link.com. This is our primary starting place for link development, and from here you'll actually see where there's going to be a set of resources on there where you can actually not only get documentation and samples, you can actually check out some users from our sandbox. So if you've never, if you maybe for some reason your link administration is in another area, you don't have a link topology, you still want to explore this development just on your own, we'll check you out some tokens that actually you can use to just get started right away with doing development. So I'm going to jump out over to my other machine right now. And now what I'm going to show is the website youseewhatillink.com. So I'm just going to run it from Chrome just for the sake of it, but this could run anywhere. It's just a web page, and your UCWA applications aren't just limited to IE or certain desktop platforms. And it could work anywhere across modern browsers. So the first thing you're going to be presented with here is the ability to explore this interactive demo. So I'm going to click on that to get started. And you can see now what it's going to do. It's asking me for login just with a standard Microsoft ID because we check out some tokens for that user. So we want to be able to track who has what tokens. So I'm just going to log in using my account. Whoops. Now we're getting logged in. And the first thing I'm presented with now is this little walkthrough. So what this is actually demonstrating is different capabilities about the API. See here, I'm getting checked out these three users from the sandbox server. I can see now it's going to walk me through what are some of the various capabilities of the API. So for example here, we can see there's this presence. If I update my presence of this user, we actually show what's going over the wire here. So curl is just the language for showing HTTP. And you can see what's going over the wire here in the same way that I kind of presented there. But to prove to you that this is real, this is not a demo, this is actually communicating back to the server and updating the presence of this user. If I press F12, I can grab and open the developer tools. And now you can see if I set my status, let's go back to available. You can see here, I can actually see in my debugging tools, and Fiddler is another good tool for using this, what's actually going over the wire. So I can see, there was this post request. And I can see the details of this, and maybe I can zoom in here, there we go. I can see the details of this. Let me scroll down as a part of this. Hang on 1 second. All right, there we go. You can see that. So here's the information that's a part of the header, and you see that bearer token that we talked about earlier that's a part of that post request. In order to make that request, you have to have that token that's a part in order to be allowed to do that as the user. Now, if we scroll down, and let's look here at more information, and this debugging tool is essentially just parsing the response and displaying it for me. We see the payload there in JSON is availability online. So I've made a post request against that presence resource, and I've set the availability to online exactly like I just did in the page. So you can see that's it's actually real requests going over the wire. So this is the same representation. So you can actually go through and you can see here, how do I start a presence subscription? What's happening over the wire? For example, if I set my presence to busy here, this person, it's going to link server now, updating my presence, and then it's actually coming back to the web page and will update now this presence based on this change that I just made. So there's no polling going on, it's just an event channel. And you can check it out and look at the requests that are actually going over the wire. I'm going to close this for now. So this is a little walkthrough. Shows how you can do, IM messages. This is actually real messaging happening. It's going to the link server, and it's coming back to the web page for this user. And you see I can see what's going over the wire as a part of this interactive demo. Here is a feature called call via work. So what you can do with the web API is you can actually either programmatically or in this case typing in a number, you can actually type in a regular phone number and you can have the Link server give you a callback and actually bridge you into a call to another user. So from here, what would happen is the server would, I'd get a call back if I type in my phone number to my phone, and then you can programmatically choose what Link user is going to actually receive that call. So you're connecting now from your phone line to another Link user, and you can imagine that use case in some customer care type scenarios. So once we finish this demo, this was a nice little demo walkthrough. We can see here, I've got some instructions. Let's zoom in a little bit. I've got some instructions, and I can see these bear tokens now, these authentication tokens that I've been given for these three users. So what we've done here is instead of giving you a username and a password and giving out usernames and passwords to everybody you authenticate, we've actually handled that ourselves, and we actually check you out these tokens. So we skip you over a step. We're giving you these tokens that you can use now to create your requests against the server, so that you'll be authenticated and allowed to make real requests against our sandbox server. So those helper libraries that we're talking about in JavaScript. So what you want to do here is first download this file. So it's just a zip file. Extract that to your local machine. And this is going to let you get set up within 5 minutes to actually start doing Yousewa development. So once you've downloaded these files, what you want to do is you want to set up a local IIS server or your equivalent to basically just host that web page. So if you've never done that before, like in Windows, it's actually quite easy. So if you type add features, you get turn Windows features on and off. You can scroll down, and what you're looking for is IIS, so this one. So I've already got it checked. All I have to do, check that box, click OK, and then it'll basically, in 30 seconds, it'll set you up. So now you have essentially a local server on your machine where you can host your first web page application. There's a default folder that it actually creates. So if you go to C and then you go to initpub www.root, and you can find more information about setting this up online, but that's the simplest way to do it. And then you can see here I've got all these web pages that I'm just hosting locally. What you do is you just copy and paste that folder that you just downloaded and just copy it directly into your www.root. And so you're essentially hosting that web page from your local machine. Now, your next step, so once that's there, is you actually want to access that. So from your web browser, you can open up any web browser that you have, and you want to go to localhost, and then the name of that folder. So here I've got it named as a default, Yousewa March 2014 samples. Here we go. So this is a real web page. The code is all provided to you in that folder, both the HTML and JavaScript files. You can see here now, I've got a couple different options to authenticate, like I was talking about. I can use that username and password. I can use those tokens from the website I just got, or I can do an anonymous meeting join. So from this website, let me showcase how to do this. So here's, I've got the token on the page. I'm going to copy this and paste that now, and one thing you want to check here is it's actually telling you what's the actual domain, and the domain of this sandbox is gotuc.net. So go back over to the samples, I'll click the developer sandbox, it's asking me for the domain, gotuc.net, copy the token that I have, and make sure you copy that word bear also as a part of that token. Click login, and now if you actually, a little late here, but if you open developer tools while you're logging in, I missed some of the requests, but you can actually see those requests I just walked through. And in the code, it actually, this JavaScript library handles that for you. So the same login flow, you can watch that actually happening over the wire. You can see now I'm authenticated. We provide you here with some various useful modules like I talked about, like we handle doing a batch request so that you don't have to. You can just use this library as a part of your solution. We're handling auto discovery, that full process and the full process of authenticating. We actually handle this as a part of the libraries, and you can basically copy and paste that and use that in your code. Useful, cool thing here is that we've essentially implemented all the key features already for you from using JavaScript. So here you can see, for example, I'm logged in as this user in the web page. I can get my presence. I'm set to busy right now. You can see I can set my presence. So let's set myself back to online. Now let's see if I grab this presence again. It goes to online. But that seems kind of, why would you want to go and grab that presence yourself every time? So I'm going to start a presence subscription. Set my status again back to busy. Set the presence. Then we'll see, because I have a subscription now set up, the request is going to come back through that event channel into the web page. We got a little bit of time, but I won't spend too much time going through all these different features, but you can see that you can set your note, you can grab the photo, that's a good one to show of this particular link user. Contacts, I can actually get my contacts. So I can see a list now that I've gotten of all the contacts for this particular user. I can do a contact search, look for a particular contact. I can do present subscription, which we talked about already. Instant messaging, so I can start an instant messaging conversation using this web API. And you can see these various test users. One interesting thing to do is you open one browser tab, log in as one of your test users, log in as the other test user in another browser tab, and you can actually have an IM conversation that's happening from one page to another web page. Now, one key feature here that I really do want to actually show is scheduling a meeting as well as anonymous meeting join. So anonymous meeting join is a feature that we expose through the web API that actually allows you to have users who don't have link credentials join into an existing meeting. So like I said, if you've ever used the link web app, you log in, and if you don't have link, you enter your guest credentials and you're joined into that meeting. You can actually enable this using the web API. So first, let's, for example, and what I'm going to do is do this through two different browser tabs. So let's see here. I'm going to just do test description. I'm going to just schedule the meeting. So you can schedule a meeting using this API. What happens is now I've got this online meeting URI actually returned to me. Using this URI, what I can actually do is now I've opened up another tab. First, what I'm going to do is actually, yes, I'll join in as the anonymous user first, then I'll join in as the other user. So you can see there's this anonymous meeting join option. When I click on this, in order to join the anonymous meeting, there has to be a meeting already set up. Well, it's a good thing I just actually scheduled a meeting, so I'm going to grab this meeting URI. I'm going to jump to this web page, copy the meeting URI into this. Display name is just the display guest name, so I'll click guest. Then I'm going to click join meeting. So now that meeting was already set up on the server, and right now I'm actually doing that authentication process where I'm an anonymous user joining into the page. So here we go. So I'm joined the meeting as a guest. Now I'm actually going to join this meeting using this user. So this is the user I already set this up. So now I'm actually joining from that link web app experience. So this is loading. I'm getting into the meeting through the link web app. This user's already joined in. And you can see I can send messages now. So now I'm joined in. Just type a username. Oh, it's asking me for the plugin now. So what's happening here is it's actually asking me to join the meeting and install this media plugin in the browser. So if I want to add audio-video capabilities currently, what we use is a lightweight browser plugin that works across all major browsers so that I can add audio-video. Instead, I actually have this already installed on IE. So I'm going to jump over here and join the meeting instead from IE. So now I'm loading this again. I'm going to allow. Let's try link web app exed. So I'm getting joined into the same meeting that other user is already logged into. Let's jump back to Chrome. It's taking a while, but now I'm joining into this meeting that was already created as a user from the web app. And now I could also have joined this meeting again directly from the link client itself, but I just wanted to showcase the joining from the web. So we're signing in. So this must be our slow sandbox server. I don't want to wait too long here, so let's move on from that. But what I've done now is I've created a conference, and I have two users joining in, and those users can IM back and forth with each other and basically have a conversation as a part of this web API. This is your starting place for web development. So download the samples on your machine. You can check out the code in the folder. There's full JavaScript files that we provide for the library, so it takes care of a lot of that boilerplate code for you. So jumping back to the presentation. Oh, now I've joined. There you go. Quite a delay on that. Let me quickly jump back so you can see what happened there. One second, I pressed the wrong, but there you go. So now I had this meeting set up. I have these two users who are joined into this conference. When I send IM messages back and forth, then I can see from the web page, there we go, the message actually has come through directly right to the web page. So I'll jump back. Now I want to get into some of the interesting stuff, a couple different type demos, different cross-platform demos, as well as I want to talk about what we're offering in the very near future that's coming as a part of this web API. So the first thing I want to talk about is the JavaScript object model and web controls. So what I explained to you today was the current capabilities of essentially a signaling layer API, where you can see those requests and you're handling those HTTP requests. What we're providing very shortly, and we're currently running a pre-release program for if you're interested, is an object model that's built on top of that signaling layer. And what that means is that we've abstracted away a lot of these signaling details, and in a couple lines of code, you could start an IAM conversation. With two lines of JavaScript code, you can just add modalities to your conversation. You can search for context. So it abstracts away some of these details that are happening, similar in the way that the libraries we provide. But the key difference here now is that we're actually exposing embedded media capabilities as part of your applications. So that's including audio, video, and desktop sharing, which traditionally in the past is not part of that signaling layer. So I'm going to show a demo of actually that app, so running the new object model, running with the media, where you're embedded in a web page. We'll be providing some UX web controls, essentially, as a part of that, so that you have an HTML control, you can essentially just drag and drop that directly into your web page. Just use that right away within your app. The other thing I briefly alluded to is that today we provide JavaScript helper libraries. There's nothing stopping you from running this API across any platform. But we want to provide you, and shortly we'll be releasing these as open source libraries, the same type of library but for Objective-C for Java. So you can write an Android app and use, instead of you having to write some of that boilerplate yourself, we're going to provide that to you as a part of the library. So I'm going to jump back now to my demo machine. And the first thing that I want to look at, let's open this up here. So the first thing I want to look at is an example, just Android application. So I'm going to actually unplug my Windows phone and just plug in this Android device I have. There we go. You can now see that there. I'm going to open up a application that we just put together as a as an example. Let's actually jump to the home page. I'm actually, looks like I'm already logged in, so let's go back. There we go. It's a simple client application, but we just wanted to showcase what some of those capabilities are from an Android app. So it really looks like a client, so I'm going to sign in as this user, Kelly K. Oh, that's the wrong account, so it's going to give me an error, probably get credentials rejected. It's attempting to sign me in with an account that doesn't exist right now. Okay, there we go, error. Okay, let's log in with, now who am I logged in my link client? Let's double check that. So I'm logged in as Heidi. I'll log in as Krista G then into this sample. Get rid of this password. And you see, we've also implemented that anonymous meeting join option. So now I'm actually authenticating, going through those authentication steps. And we've showcased here that inside of your app, you can basically have the full set of capabilities that you would expect from Link Client, but this is just a third-party app. It's not really designed around any particular scenario, this example, but it's showcasing some of those different features. So I can see Krista G is online. So I'm going to actually go to my contacts here. And now it's basically pulling my contacts. And I can't tell if this is just the program that's projecting this being slow, or it's actually the connection here. But essentially, this app is actually just another client. We have the full set of capabilities that you can embed. Say if this was your particular company app and you wanted to add in some of those capabilities to this, you could definitely do that. Well, let's try another example. Let's set the note. Testing note. There we go. So you can see over here, this user got updated their note. Let's try actually IMing Krista. So I see I'm getting an incoming IM message. I'm handling this as a part of my app, accepting the message. There we can see. Oh, great. It's displaying those messages, but now I can type a message here, send that message. There we go. Now the IM is coming through. So again, this is all running on an Android platform, and that full set of capabilities is there on that platform. Now the next thing I want to show is that Android, actually, we provide a full link client that you can use on the Android device. When it really gets interesting is when you start to think about a scenario where there actually is no link client already running on that. There's no link client available today to run on that platform. So the next demo that I want to show is I've got a Raspberry Pi here, a Linux platform, and we can actually run a web API example directly from this device. So now I think I've timed out here. Let's restart here while we're waiting. And we're going to have to plug in here. Power, and we'll restart. There we go. So there we go. I got to remember the location. So now we're booting up this device. It's not the most powerful processor, but it's now we're setting up. And for the sake of time, I might actually show this demo after the session if anybody's interested in coming and see. But what I actually did is wrote a quick app that I've got some LEDs here for a simple example where we set up a demo where if you IM the device, so we have an account logged in using the web API on this device. If you send an IM, we actually take those IMs and we use those IMs to make something else happen as a part of this platform. So what we've done here is I've got these different color LEDs. If I send an IM message that says red on, we take that message and we actually use that to turn on the LED as part of the device. So you can think about different scenarios where now you can leverage the link as a communications backbone to do control on some of these devices. So for example, you could open a door if you send a message through link to this particular device. So using your link client, you send a message and you open a door lock that's been enabled through your application. That's just one kind of interesting scenario. But the point is that the web API is supported across all devices, that anything that supports an HTTP stack. So if you're thinking about any sort of apps that you might be wanting to write, you can think about it across various platforms. Now, the reason I want to jump out of this is because actually the more interesting demo is what I was talking about with the media pieces. So now I'm going to open up this demo here. Let's close out some of these link apps that we had open. Leave those. So what I have here is actually a real-world type example of using this web API for a real scenario. So this is around a healthcare type scenario. And what I'm going to do is showcase a website that's using this web API along with media for a business-to-customer type interaction. So if you saw the demo yesterday of the financial services interaction, this is very similar, but it's built for a kind of a healthcare type scenario. So I'm going to log in as a test user here. And let's get this logged in. And then I'm going to play the role of the agent also, or in this case, the nurse or doctor, who is using Link as a part of their company deployment. So I'm logged in as Heidi. So just for this demo sake, I'm going to actually put in Heidi's credentials. Now, in general, this is just for the demo. Obviously, you would do some routing, which we'll look at in a second, to the particular user in the organization that you wanted to get connected to. But for the sake of the demo, I'm just going to enter that name. Let's log into the web page. So as a user to this website, I'm logging in now, in this case, just using my credentials for this web page. I actually don't have Link client installed on my computer. I'm just logging into a web page as I normally would. What actually we're doing under the hood here is that user is actually hooked underneath the hood essentially to a real Link user. So I'm logged in here and I just see my dashboard, my information about my health appointments. I can see it's just the company website. It looks like the branding of this fictional company, Metio Healthcare. Interesting thing, we're already seeing some of those capabilities through the web API is that actually I have this IM automated bot now on the side that's actually given me a welcome message to the web page. So displaying this in the web page is done using the web API. That automated bot is built using one of Link's server APIs, the UC managed API that I talked about yesterday. So here what we can see is that as I go through this web page, let's say I'm looking at this symptom checker. I'm having some hand pain, for example. As I go through this kind of website, we can see here that as I go through, this bot is actually sending me messages based on where I am in the web page. So not only is an IM conversation happening over here, there's some context associated with it that we can build out using the platform. So I select hand pain. I can see some more information. The bot here over on the side is, and this is all built using Link technology, is it's now asking me some questions. So this is like an IVR, a voice response system, but taking that to the next level. So it's asking me a question about my injury. I'll say yes. I have pain. Is there swelling? Yes. Great. So now, actually, this is an IM conversation happening with an automated bot created with Link. It's taken those answers I've given, that contextual information, and now I've updated my web page based on those answers that are happening in the IM window. I can also have the capability, for example, here to the bot, I can ask a question. So I see carpal tunnel on the page, so I'm going to ask, what is carpal tunnel? What we've done is we've hooked that bot on our back end up to a database of frequently asked questions that we have for this web page. So one of the key values here is adding that contextual information as a part of a conversation that you're having, in particular in this web case for a customer type scenario. But you can see by using this IM bot, I've almost gone through a triage type system. So instead of talking directly to an agent or talking directly to that user, I've actually just kind of interacted with the web page, gone through this page and asked the question of the bot and came up with some more information. Now, you'll see here down at the bottom, now I have this chat with a nurse button. So one of Link's server-side capability, and you can see we've embedded this presence in here, but this presence is actually a concept of aggregated presence. So this presence here is not of one particular user. This is a presence of a pool of nurses who are available to take my response, who are using Link themselves. When I click on this button, and I'm not logged in as the nurse right now, but when I click on that button, what you can do using Link server-side technologies, you can actually do some skills-based call routing and automated call distribution, or ACD. So that call can actually be routed based on not only where I am in this web page, so not only based to an expert who's got an expert on hand pain, for example, or a carpal tunnel, it can also be routed to an agent who's actually available on Link. So if their status is busy on Link or they're already in a call, that call will be routed to another user who's actually available and has that required skill set. So that's kind of a brief intro. I talked a little bit more yesterday, but we have partners who built full contact centers on top of Link. Really today we focused on those client-side applications, but there's a whole range of server-side capabilities also as a part of that. Now, what I want to do here actually is going to jump back to the homepage, because what I've done is I've logged in as this doctor here into Link. And I can see I've got this start consult capability on the page. So I've got this appointment that's already been scheduled. Now I actually want to start a consultation directly with that doctor. So what we actually implemented too is kind of this custom presence capability. So when I set my status to busy, what you'll see happen on the web page is that this consult actually became grayed out. So the doctor is not available right now, so you can't actually contact them. I'm going to set myself back to available. And then we're going to see this button actually come back. There we go. And I'll start a consult here now from the web page. Click continue. Disclaimer for the scenario. Now the call is being connected to the doctor. You can see this video window has opened. And now I'm actually going to get a call. And here comes the toast. So this is the link toast that's coming through. Getting a request for a video call. We're going to get some feedback. And there we go. We don't really need audio. But now you can see what's happened is in the web page. This user is seeing the video directly embedded in the web page of that user who is on link. So now I've taken it to the next level, and I've actually embedded full media capabilities now into my web application. So normally, if you were calling from two different machines, the doctor would see both video feeds. Because I'm calling from the same machine, it's only obviously going to show one video feed. But you can see here now I'm in this embedded video. Now, I showed a similar example yesterday of a financial services type scenario that would be similar to this for business to customer type interactions. You can also see, and I can actually add desktop sharing as a part of this conversation. So maybe as the doctor, I want to share some diagrams with this patient I'm having a consult with. So I'm going to do desktop sharing. See, I got a message. Do you want to accept this app sharing? I'll say yes. And now we can see what's loading now on this page is full desktop sharing. This is always fun. Sharing within sharing. So you can see now that I've actually, like if I pull something up, you're actually seeing this screen. Now we can watch that propagate through. Let's close this for now. But currently today, and we talked a little bit more about this last session. I can see I'm out of time here, but we're providing these media capabilities today through an ActiveX media plugin as a part of the browser. We discussed a little bit yesterday about the reasoning behind that. And from a developer perspective, we want you to know that even though we're providing the media through that model today, a plugin that the user would just click install, we are actively working together with IE on creating a standard for ourselves that's similar to WebRTC, where there's a plugin-less media model for within the browser. And so that API layer that we provide, that object model that I talked about, that will stay the same, regardless of what media you're actually plugging into inside of your browser applications. So that's a very brief introduction. These type of capabilities are actually being run by my team as a part of a pre-release program. Expect them to release around the first half of next year publicly. But if you're interested in joining the program or testing out using some of these new capabilities, come up and talk to me after, and we can get your company enrolled into our beta program. So it looks like I'm out of time. We guess we can open up for questions. And we have a mic at the back, so.
Hi. Two questions. The first one, all of these capabilities is supporting Office 365 in Link. And the second one is, from my experience, there is a lot of problem with the connection, with the authentication mm-hmm. between server. For example, between SharePoint Web Parts and Link. So how we can deal with that? Because for me, I saw many 403 and forbidden connection and so on.
So let me address your first question first. So I didn't address that too much in this presentation. I talked a little bit about it in the presentation yesterday. But currently today, these capabilities are only, and the web API itself is supported only for Link on-premises. Now, with that being said, we're actually very focused on making these same set of capabilities light up in Link Online. So our first step, and I talked about this yesterday, but our first step will be enabling the web API for user endpoints for Link Online. And you'll see that coming, again, I don't have a set date, but you'll see that coming early next calendar year. Then the other thing that we're focused on is the server-side applications. So these automated bots, call routing type scenarios, if you built anything using UCMA, we're actually going to be exposing that as a REST interface, and that'll work together with Link Online. So one promise that we have is that the code you write today using this web API for an on-premises server, that same code is actually going to work for Link Online. There's going to be a slightly different auth process and slightly different process for registering your apps against Link Online, but the code that you're writing in the REST interface is going to stay the exact same. So that's where we are today. The other question around connectivity is more is probably more around an infrastructure issue and a networking issue. Have you explored, and there was a session about this, we've released something called software-defined networking, which is essentially the ability through Link as an application to actually diagnose your network issues and network conditions and also make recommendations through that API, and this is all done through that, to your infrastructure components, your networking components, about what Link particularly needs. For example, there you have different needs over your network if you're having a full conference, full audio video call versus some of the other capabilities. So what I would suggest, and if that's the issue, that's what's happening, I would say read up a little bit about SDN or software-defined networking. Yep, next question.
Hi, I'm Daniel Downing from Tieto. Great demo. Does it also handle the Link whiteboard?
No, not today. Not okay. Today. So the first things we've enabled, so we have from the media side, we have audio, video, desktop sharing. The next will be app control, so having control through a web page like this. For now, it's not directly on our roadmap for whiteboarding, particularly from the web API. There may be some other ways you could handle that example through some Office 365 APIs, maybe something through OneNote. But today through Link, we don't offer that through the web API.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Two related questions on the cross-platform thing, because I think when you had all the platforms up, you had .NET sitting in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a complete lack of samples for anything other than the web app and the JavaScript.
Yep.
Both on MSDN and the site that you put up, it's basically there's nothing other than the web app. Have you got samples coming for other platforms? Is the first question.
Yes. So today, now there's a couple samples on MSDN. Depends what you're looking for. There's a couple modern app C# samples. Very basic, but they are posted on MSDN. There's some C# app, C# samples basically posted already there. So if you search for USIWA C# sample, you'll find a couple examples on MSDN. The next thing that we will be releasing a .NET C# helper library, essentially, as a part of an open source project that we're working on. That will be one that we'll be providing, and then the other will be a Java library and an Objective-C library.
And the second one is about the logon methodology and how it works with .NET, mm-hmm. which might be going a bit down a rabbit hole, but I'll try you anyway.
Sure.
All the system.NET web client and related functions, mm-hmm. when they get a 401 error back, they don't return the headers. So the method that you use for logging on doesn't work with .NET because you can't get that www authenticate header in a .NET application when you go and say, give me the me page, and it comes back and it says, no, you've got to log on. The application, the .NET libraries basically stop when they see the 401 error. Can't use any of those to log in.
So just so I know, which .NET are you using? A pack, like, how are you sending the requests across from HTTP?
I basically can call system.net.webclient.
Uh-huh.
I tell it to go to that URI, and it comes back and it says 401 error unauthorized. But that, the system.net web client doesn't give me any headers when it gets a 401 error. So I can't go on to the next step to authenticate. And most of the stuff, I'm trying to do this from PowerShell. Most of the stuff that I can call from PowerShell, whether I, whatever method I use to go around and find another way of talking to HTTP, they all do the same thing. They all refuse to give me the headers when they get a 401 error.
Interesting. So I would look at and see there should be other options besides using system.net.webclient for actually sending those requests and getting the full responses back. We can actually look at it later, or you can contact me. We have those C# libraries that we are using. They're doing essentially the exact same thing as you're trying to do, and doing it in a .NET environment. So, happy to, if you can contact me later about that. Yeah, no, definitely.
Okay, Tomáš Chrápek from Tieto here. I actually would like to ask, how do you handle those situations when this concept has a great possibilities and a user can have multiple apps running at the same time, logged in to link? And we already see some problems from time to time when you use desktop client and mobile app, just two endpoints, and sometimes messages are not coming to both of them. And it's just, and how do you handle the situation when the client will be have like five clients at once.
Right, exactly. So essentially when you create a UCWA app, it's almost like another client endpoint. So the way that Link server is handling that active endpoint for where the message actually comes through, and I believe today it's done by the most, and there's some issues I know with the mobile client today where even though you're active on the desktop client, you'll still get the message to the mobile client coming through later. Yeah. I know there is some issues there, and I know in the next version of Link Server they're looking at improving some of that experience. But from a web app perspective, it's the same as having another client endpoint. So that active, the most recent active endpoint, will be the one that actually receives that message coming through.
Okay, so the most.
Hey, no problem. One more question. While we're going through questions, I just want a quick reminder, please evaluate the session and give some feedback using this QR code or after the session.
It's just a connection with that point there.
Yeah.
Is there any way that you can save the conversation still? Because the biggest problem I have with the mobile client is it doesn't save any of my conversation history.
Right.
So sometimes I get these messages popping in on both interfaces, and then sometimes they just pop in on one interface,
right?
And I lose the messages sometimes.
Yeah, so that's another area that you can expect an update in. We know that's been a big pain point, and it's been a big feedback item. Is how do you keep conversation history consistent across devices?
Yeah.
So like, I open my mobile app, I don't see the conversation that I had previously with that person on the desktop client. So I can't give any details right now, but the next update, next version of Link Server, we're working towards having an update around that to make that experience better for having consistent conversation history and persistent conversations across all your devices.
Okay, thanks.
No problem. All right, anything else? Great, well, thanks for joining.